Welcome to the Transition Bridge Podcast, the podcast that will help you embrace, grow, and be transformed by the transitions of life. Now here's your host, Debbie Ronka.
Welcome to the Transition Bridge Podcast. I'm Debbie Ronka, your host, and today we're going to talk about something that our world desperately needs. We're going to talk about something that every heart is longing for, and that's compassion. You know, compassion is something that I believe we all need to understand. There's something about compassion that I believe that we're missing. There's something about compassion, if we could have more knowledge or understanding on it and really understand how it impacts people's lives, I believe we would find the initiative, the desire to begin to pursue compassion in the way that we think, in the way that we live our lives. And you know, life is hard and transitions can be difficult. We need to understand how to bring compassion to a loved one that's experiencing transition in life. It's hard to navigate these different spaces and really understand why compassion is that necessary balm or ingredient to promote healing in each other's hearts and souls. And honestly, I am so excited. I cannot wait for you to meet my special friend, Pantea Vahidi. In my own words, she is an angel of compassion, a presence in this world that walks and lives in a realm of compassion like no one I have ever met in my entire life. In Pantea's bio, she's called the Compassion Ambassador. And she is set on a mission to remind humanity of the healing power of compassion. Pantea's work in all of her different roles is focused on alleviating suffering through reconnecting everyone to their inherent compassion in order to heal themselves and others. Vahidi is the founder of Compassion Clinic and a weekly forum called Talk Time, where special guests will come on and share their personal stories of pain to help raise awareness and inspire change in the healthcare system, in our culture and society. While Pantea and her inner nurse is more focused on reigniting compassion in healthcare, her work really does go beyond healthcare. Her expanded vision is to provide relief and restore compassion around the globe. And she would share, as she was growing up in Iran, her parents would recite a poem to her to bring awareness and to instill compassion in her heart. And here's that poem. Compassion transforms thorns into flowers. Compassion transforms vinegar into wine. Pantea's desire is to create her own family legacy based upon these beautiful and powerful words of this poem. Pantea, welcome. Welcome, my friend, to the Transition Bridge Podcast. I'm so honored to have you.
Oh my God, Debbie, I'm so humbled by that intro. I don't know if I can speak now.
Oh, it is so who you are. You live and embody compassion. Every time I hear you speak, I hear a depth of compassion that takes me to a place. It's like a deeper place. Like, I feel like I have a measure of compassion. And then I listen to you and I go, oh, it's so beautiful. It's so deep. I would just call you an expert on compassion because you understand it, you've lived it, and you bring it to others.
Thank you so much, Debbie. Well, my wish is to be an expert. I'm on a journey to understand it. I'm on a journey towards it. And I think all of us can improve every day. But I appreciate your words. And you yourself have had a huge impact on my life. You call me the angel of compassion. I call you the prayer warrior. Your words are uplifting and you heal through your words, which is why I'm so excited about not just this episode of the podcast, but you having a podcast. You just broadcast that love. The power of your word just resonates through, and the vibration of it heals the world. And trust me, this is nothing I had rehearsed. It was all from my heart.
Oh, thank you. I received that blessing from you. Thank you so much, my friend. Well, I love the poem that your parents would recite to you. So tell us about that time in your life when you were growing up in Iran.
Oh, my goodness, Debbie. I grew up in Iran I was born a year after the revolution in Iran that happened. And actually, I apologize, a year before. So all of my childhood was in time of crisis, where the country I was born and raised in was going through a revolution. A few years into my life, we started an 8-year-long war with our neighboring country, which lost the lives of many, sadly. And so it was a time of terror. It was a time of fear. It was a time of uncertainty. But interestingly, I have such fond memories of my childhood. And when I think back, is only because of that connectedness with others. It's because we would come together as a family with our neighbors, with our communities, during those dark nights when there were bombings going on, and when we would hear the alarm and we would go in hiding, we would all go together and hold each other tight. So I think the roots of me believing that compassion heals is because those times there was nothing that could heal or comfort us. You know, we just experienced the pandemic, and I know that came with a lot of uncertainty of, you know, when do schools begin? When is this going to be over? When does life return to normal? It was the same, not knowing what tomorrow holds, not knowing when the war ends, you know, everything that came with it, not just the war, but famine, poverty, everything, destruction. But when I think back, the only thing that helped us pull through, for those of us who actually survived it, were those compassionate exchanges in the midst of darkness. It was holding each other's hand. It was taking food to a friend that their house just got bombed. I remember vividly, we had a friend that the vibrations of the bomb that was struck next to their house had all their glasses shatter on a stormy day, and their house was flooded. And, you know, we would all take food for them. So it was really those acts of compassion that carried us through. And so when I look back at what it would have otherwise been trauma, I try to focus on those beautiful moments of connecting and compassion, and that's been very healing.
That's an amazing story. I can't even imagine being so young and experiencing that. And I love the fact that the memory that resonates with you is the compassion that came from the community. It sounds to me like when I hear that, I have this like vision of this flame, this warm flame of compassion just going around from one to another, because you became like aware of what everyone else needed as your community. And I feel like, gosh, if our world could learn to be aware of not where we disagree or where we're different, but what we need and how can I serve you. So tell us about compassion. How does it help people?
So Debbie, ever since, as far back as I remember myself, I've always wanted to make people feel better in like very simple words. Just like, I was not a nurse when I was born, right? But I had this strong desire to make anyone who was sad or in pain or aching feel better. And when I look back, the way I would do it, absent any other skills, is I would sit with them, I would talk to them. And, you know, this desire eventually drove me to, as my second career, go back to school and become a registered nurse. And I thought, okay, now I have like all the skills that I can actually help people heal, you know, truly. And through my years at the bedside, I realized something very interesting. I realized that while as a nurse, I have more skills available to me, I have more devices and equipment available to use. I have medications that I can administer. It came full circle that I realized, you know, that patient that is in pain, and the highest dose of morphine doesn't work anymore, and the Dilaudid has worn off, and I'm not allowed to give another dose, and all those pains that nothing else can comfort, the only thing that could bring comfort is to actually sit with them, hold their hand, letting them talk, and making them feel seen and heard and valued. So it was a journey of coming full circle to, you know, becoming a nurse in the hopes of being able to help relieve suffering, but then really realizing that our biggest power is to really be compassionate to others, and you don't need to be a nurse to do that.
You know, I have this quote here. It's interesting that you just shared that. And it says, kindness and compassion can heal the wounds that medicine cannot heal. So can you share briefly a story of someone that maybe was a patient of yours where you saw the effects of compassion? Because I would love for our audience, you know, we hear the word compassion and I think we have a sense of it. But like, what are the benefits of compassion? Like, teach us so we can understand, because I think all of us have a desire to be more compassionate.
Absolutely. And, you know, the patient stories are what drove me to do the work that I do today, because what happened at the bedside was that I saw the miraculous healing that happens when there is compassion. And then I saw the destruction that the deficit of it causes. And that contrast was the driver for me to, you know, the scientist in me, the geek in me. I have a background in engineering and I always have to geek out on science, made me to delve into the science of compassion, because I was like, what is this phenomena, right? Mm-hmm. And that drove me to explore the science, but then it came back to how do we practice it? So one of the patient stories, in fact, this sticks out because I reconnected with that patient 2 days ago.
Oh, I love it.
And so that's why she's fresh on my heart. She always is. But this was a patient that a young mother with three children in her, I want to say late 30s, and her children aged like 4, 2, and 1. And three beautiful little girls. She had a very aggressive and advanced form of colon cancer. And she was hospitalized, and I had the blessing of being her nurse. And we had conversations, we connected, we would share stories, and she had to go to surgery. So this one day, the physician came to prepare her for the operational room and to take her into the OR, and did what she had to do, which is going over the risks and benefits of the surgery. And, you know, as healthcare professionals, we're trained to kind of highlight and stress on the risks, right? We're taught that in our medical training to say, you know, you could die under anesthesia, or this could happen, or that could happen. So as she was doing that, I had the blessing of being present in the room. And I just looked at her face, the patient's face, and it was drooping. And there was fear and there was tears hiding in the corner of her eyes. And she looked at the doctor and said, "Will I ever be able to eat again, or will I always have to be connected to TPN?" Now, TPN, for those not in the medical field, is liquid form of nutrition that goes through the IV. And she had been on it because she wasn't allowed to eat food. The hospitalist looked at her and kind of like shrugged her shoulders and said, "I don't know." And like shook her head.
Oh.
And left the room. I personally felt like my heart skipped a beat because I looked at her and she was devastated.
Sure.
And then she was connected to a heart monitor that was monitoring her heart rate. I vividly saw her heart rate shoot up and her blood pressure go up. And she looked at me with desperation and said, "What do you think? You've seen people like me. What do you think?" And being mindful of the fact that I can't give her false hope, you know, I looked at her and I said, "I know your cancer is advanced, but I believe in you more than I believe in your cancer."
Oh, great answer.
And I said, "You have a lot to fight for." And I grabbed her phone, which I had glanced at before, and her wallpaper was her three lovely, beautiful, doll-looking girls. And I said, "Look at that picture. You need to fight for them. And I know you will." And so, you know, I sat with her for, I don't know, maybe 30 minutes. And we had a heart-to-heart conversation. And I said, what's your dream? What makes you happy, right? Like outside of being a mom. And she said, "Oh, I love to hike." And I said, "Okay, let's envision you hiking again. And in fact, you know what? We have a beautiful hike here in San Diego. It's called the Torrey Pines Hike, where you go up to a point that you see, all you see is the ocean." And I said, "You're going to get better and we're going to go on our Torrey Pines hike."
Uh-huh.
And she grabbed that and she held on to it. You know, I always tell people in my trainings, compassion is like lending someone an emotional cane and instilling belief in them until they can believe in it themselves. So she just grabbed onto that. And after her heart rate settled and, you know, her color came back, she was motivated and she said, "I am going to fight. What do you think I should do to help myself?" And I said, "You should get up and walk the hallway, because ambulating and mobility is going to help." And she got up. She's like, "Okay, can you help me?" So we walked down the hallway. And she did have her surgery. And I'm so glad to say that, you know, as of 2 days ago when I checked in with her, and it's been 3 years, she's cancer-free.
Oh, well, that's great news. Oh, thank you.
And we were going to go on that hike, but then the pandemic happened and I was working at the hospital and she was high risk. So I didn't want to meet up with her. But 2 days ago when we spoke, we decided to finally go on that hike.
Oh, and I love it.
So we are going on that hike. But, you know, it was moments like that. It was moments like that and that connection that made me realize, oh my God, what a difference it makes when you still sit with people and you instill hope in them.
Yes, that's what I was thinking. Everything that you were sharing with her was giving her hope to confront what it is that she had to go through, you know, rather than laying down and giving up. You actually gave her something to hold on to. How beautiful. And that's all wrapped up in the gift of compassion.
It is. And, you know, when I delve into the science of compassion, and the science is abundant on the benefits of it. And many people are surprised to learn that it actually even has physiological benefits. They've done thorough studies on how it regulates the heart rate, which I saw with my own eyes, right? It regulates the endocrine system. It helps your respiratory rate. It's abundant. But what caught my attention was that we understand compassion on an intrinsic level, right? We were born as compassionate beings. We also, you know, the scientist in us that likes to understand everything, we also understand that science confirms the benefits of it. But how do we practice it, right? Because I'll admit as a clinician that being compassionate is sometimes hard, right? If you like the patient I just told you about was and is a beautiful person, kind and calm and all of that, but it's not always like that. Like, especially in healthcare, you have patients that throw things at you. You know, violence against nurses is a big concern. You have patients that are screaming. You have family members that are upset and are banging on the door. And those are the moments when being compassionate is hard. So, you know, the engineer in me thought, we know compassion is beneficial for health. We also understand it's a beautiful virtue, but how can we practice it? And so after, you know, I had the pleasure and the honor of collaborating with UCSD, University of California, San Diego, on a scoping review on all the measures of empathy and compassion. And after reviewing hundreds and thousands of articles, I sat on the couch and I'm like, okay, how can we define compassion? There are a lot of people in the world of compassion, you know, that are active, such as the Dalai Lama, the Holy Dalai Lama, and many other people. And they define compassion as the drive that you have to change something because of empathy, right? So I came and I'm like, I'm going to expand on that definition. Because in working with hospitals, I realized, as a chief medical officer once told me, if we want to learn more about something, we need to have a standard definition. So I came up with my own version of the definition, and I define compassion as understanding the need, the pain, or the situation, and taking a meaningful and thoughtful action to respond to someone's pain with the intention to provide relief, comfort, hope, joy, and strength.
That really says it all right there.
So any act of compassion that I can think of follows under that definition.
What? See, when I hear you say that, what was the first word that you said? A desire?
Understanding.
Understanding.
The first step is understanding. It's understanding three things: the pain, the need, or the situation.
So here's my question for you. And I believe that, and that's why I'm so excited we're doing this together, because I think a lot of us don't understand what compassion is, how to even step in and operate in it. And then, you know, I think what happens is sometimes our hearts, like life is busy, our hearts could just be in another place. We're not actually thinking of other people. There's so many situations, I think, almost blind us to opportunity to be compassionate. And I'm wondering, what would you say to us that are trying to learn to be more compassionate? Like, how would you teach me to be more compassionate?
Oh my God, I can't teach you, Debbie. You're like the epitome of compassion. You can rephrase the question
okay.
And I'll answer it.
How can you teach the audience, all of us, including me, how to be compassionate? Because I love to move this needle in my life too. I want to be more compassionate.
So, you know, the definition that I gave you is a more thorough definition, but I've also developed the compassion formula, which just essentially, to simplify it, says compassion is having empathy and taking action. It's as simple as that. It's different than empathy. Empathy is, I feel your pain. Compassion is, I feel your pain and I'm going to do something about it. You know, a lot of, like I said, a lot of experts in the field of compassion define it as a desire to alleviate the pain. I go a step further and I daringly say it's not a desire. You actually do it. So, you know, kind of going back on that definition of having empathy and taking action, empathy, according to the literature, has six different kinds. But the two that are most common and well understood is cognitive empathy and affective empathy, right?
Okay.
And affective empathy, what is each one of them? Affective empathy comes from your emotions. Affective empathy is like when I have experienced something similar to what you're experiencing, right? Now, I'm careful to use the word similar. I never say I've experienced the same, right? Mm-hmm. So if I'm talking to someone, they've lost a parent, I've lost a parent, I have affective empathy. Now, the situation is similar, never the same. Why is it never the same? Because maybe when I lost a parent and I was grieving, I had a supportive partner that was by my side, and maybe you didn't. So that makes it different, right?
Okay.
But nonetheless, we both experienced loss of a parent. There's so many things that could make it different. You could have had a closer bond with your parent than I did. I could have been estranged from my parent, right? And so on and so forth. So our experiences are never exactly the same. But nonetheless, affective empathy is when you've experienced something similar. Cognitive empathy, like the word says it, right? You understand it cognitively. So here's an example. I had a patient who had attempted suicide, right? Mm. And the mother was at the bedside and she was shaken and she had a range of different emotions she was feeling. And she felt helpless because she knew this is not the end of it. And the moment that they're discharged, she's going to have to think about how to protect her child again, right? So I could imagine what it could be like. And that's where I say cognitive empathy is directly correlated with the power of your imagination. And if you want to, and this is something that took me years to unveil, is that if you want to cultivate compassion in your family, in your organization, in your community, you can bank on cognitive empathy. You can't make people induce them with similar experiences, which is affective empathy, right? But you can invest in cultivating cognitive empathy by promoting that imagination. Okay, so if you see someone who's not very empathetic, you can pause and raise awareness and understanding by saying, can you imagine what that mom is feeling? Mm-hmm. Like, can you imagine all the worries they have? Can you imagine like this and this and this they have to think about? And when you do that, you reconnect people to tap into their inherent compassion, because we are all hardwired with compassion. Compassion is not something I teach people. I would never make such a claim. I simply remind them to reconnect to that inherent compassion. And why is it inherent in us? I have proof for it. The proof is that it's actually our survival depends on it. I'll say that.
I agree.
You know, as a newborn, we couldn't take care of our own needs, right? As a newborn, you and I were hungry and we cried. Some beautiful person, whether it was our biological parent or some other beautiful soul, heard us cry. That's empathy. and understood, oh my God, she must be hungry or soiled or whatnot. If they would stop there, that would be empathy. But they would take action to relieve it. So they would pick us up and they would either change us or clean us or feed us. So as human beings that can't immediately walk and talk and eat as soon as we're born, we depend on someone else's compassion to survive. Now, I always add that even as adults, we still depend on someone else's compassion to survive. We just seem to forget it.
Wow, that is really, I'm just really reflecting on what you said. So as adults, we forget that we need compassion?
As adults, we forget the power of it. We forget that our survival still depends on that exchange of compassion, to give it and to receive it, right? And as St. Francis says so beautifully, it is in giving that we receive.
Yes.
So as adults, we tend to forget the power of that compassionate exchange. As, you know, newborns, on a subconscious level, we know our life depends on it. As our adults, it still does. But we get too busy with the noise in the world, and we forget that not only we need that, but we have this infinite reservoir of it within us. And all we need to do is tap into it.
So it comes down to, see, I never realized that we were hardwired. I always thought, well, there's certain people in life that just walk in compassion and the rest of us are learning or observing or the recipients of the compassion. So from what I hear you saying, compassion is like one of those virtues in life that we can tend to look past and we don't see its power or value. We have forgotten from the time that we were infants how it really nurtured our soul. So, gosh, it's like we just laid it down, or we just don't think it's a necessary thing in life anymore.
Or we get busy, right?
Mm-hmm.
We get busy and we forget. And we live in a world that there's a lot of distance between human beings. And there, I see a culture of, I'm thriving to be independent of all other people. Or, you know, a lot of people advocate for boundaries. And I'm not saying having boundaries, personal boundaries, is not advised. All I'm saying is that we live in a world that every corner you look, not every, but most corners you look, there's this culture of you need to get to a place that you don't need anyone. I think the pandemic actually was a huge reminder of how much we depend on one another. You know, I remember early on in the pandemic when everyone was ordered to be quarantined. That was when I saw that sense of community. I personally went to my neighbors and said, you know, I'm running to the store. Can I pick up something for you? And those are the times that people are reminded that even if I have all these fancy apps on my phone, at the end of the day, I do rely on other human beings. We were born to do life together. We weren't born to do life alone. And the ego in us takes over, and we have this illusion that we can do it on our own. But and maybe we can, but that's not what we're meant to do. And that deprives us from experiencing the meaning in life and really treasuring and rejoicing in those beautiful exchanges that light up our heart.
You know, you're making me think about times when people were compassionate towards me, and there's like a warmth that really does come over your heart. There's something about that that makes you feel like, oh my gosh, they just made me feel so special that they thought of me. that they cared enough that they saw me. Yeah, and that's what we deprive ourselves of. Like you said, if we're not intentional to become aware, to begin to look for opportunity. And I agree with you. We're meant to have relationship together. We're meant to have community. That's where you thrive. That's where you grow. That's where you heal. And, you know, I think people's hearts, unfortunately, have become hardened or distant, like you said. And that's my heart's cry, is that our hearts awaken again to the very things that God himself placed inside of us to give to other people. Our words, our kindness, our smile. We're supposed to be giving good to one another, because that's really what changes us. And as your heart's desire to have a global impact around the world with compassion. And I love what you're doing, because I think we've lost we haven't had the understanding. So now we're gaining the understanding of the power of compassion and how we really need to put it back in our lives. It's like one of those things that I want to just put on my daily thing. Who are you going to be compassionate towards? Will you show up compassionate today, Debbie? Like, prepare myself to even walk in that space.
You know, Debbie, first of all, everything you said is a testament to why I love you so much. But something that it reminded me of is, you know, in the realm of healthcare, which is my wheelhouse, when I work with clinicians, first of all, another deep held belief I have is that compassion is the antidote to compassion fatigue.
Yes.
You know, and I always talk about, you know, let's dissect the phrase compassion fatigue. I honestly don't believe you can be fatigued from being compassionate. Now, there are other things that happen, right? Like you could feel a lot of pain when you see someone else suffering. But the beauty of compassion, which is what I advocate for versus empathy in the world, and empathy is a huge part of it. But if you stop at empathy, right? I'm a born empath. It's a blessing and a curse at the same time. But if you stop at empathy and you feel pain for a fellow human being and what they're going through, and you take that pain and you go home with it, you're going to be exhausted. You're going to be depleted of life. You're going to get burnt out in the, you know, sense of the word burnout. But if you, in that moment that you feel empathy towards someone, if you move to action and do something about it, yes, you're still going to feel sad for that person, but you're going to go home feeling like, I made an impact, I made a difference. And so you're not going to carry that helplessness with you. And helplessness is actually one of the symptoms of burnout. It's one of the characteristics or attributes of it.
Okay.
Right? But when you take action, you're not only just helping that person, you're helping yourself. Because if you just stop at empathy, you're going to carry pain with you. But if you provide that relief with a thoughtful and meaningful action, you know, as a nurse, I had numerous encounters where there was nothing I could do to stop that person from dying, right? Or there was nothing I could do to take someone's cancer away. So we as human beings don't like to feel helpless. But when you're compassionate, I remember vividly, I had this patient who was dying and his family was gathered around his bedside, and I knew I can't stop him from dying. I would go in every, it was actually a day that he wasn't even assigned to me, the day before I had taken care of him. But I would go in his room every chance I would get in between my patients, and I would just sit there and hold his hand and say words of comfort, like things like, your daughter's going to be okay, your son's going to be okay, you've raised beautiful children, your legacy will stay alive, and I would hold his hand. And one of his relatives at the bedside said, "May I take a picture?" And I said, "Sure." And so he took a picture of my hand holding his hand.
Oh, I love it.
And then he said, "You know what? Every other person that came by his bedside to hold his hand as the family came to say goodbye, he took pictures of that hand holding. And then he made it into a collage and he framed it. And it was displayed at the funeral, actually at the burial, which I had the pleasure of attending. So moral of the story is, I like to believe I provided some sense of relief for that family member at the bedside, right? So yes, you know, I always say in my workshops, I always say, when you shift your mindset from fixing problems to providing relief, you feel empowered because you can always provide relief.
That's a beautiful shift in the way to think, because you're right. We can always provide relief, and it doesn't have to be grandioso. It could just be a simple gesture.
And it's those small gestures that mean the world, you know, like the patient that I told you about that looked at me with that desperation. All I said was, "I believe in you more than I believe in cancer." It was just one sentence.
But you know, when you said that the first time, it just really hit my soul. It just made me go, oh, like, that was the perfect thing to say. I mean, it's so beautiful. That was so God-given, that thought at that moment, because you made yourself available. And I think that's my heartbeat right now, is a challenge for all of us to make ourselves available to the one who's hurting, to make ourselves available to the one who's really maybe in fear or lost hope. Like, can we be available? And you know, I'm going to bring up this parable, the parable of the Good Samaritan, because I was thinking about our conversation that we were going to have about compassion. And the story, of course, is there's a man walking to Jericho, and on his way, he's robbed, he's beaten, and everything he owns is taken. And he's left to die on the side of the road. And later on in the day, a priest came by, but he kept walking. He looked, but he kept going. And then another person came by, and they looked upon the man. They never stopped, and they kept going. And then the third person came, and he saw the man, and the parable says he had compassion. And he stoops down and he cleans his wounds with oil and wine and puts him on his donkey and takes him to an inn and actually pays for him to be taken care of. And I thought, what a beautiful picture of compassion, but also a picture of how sometimes we could show up in the world and say, you know, that appointment is more important than taking care of someone. My role or my job is more important than stopping just for a moment to lend a hand, to reach out. And that's my heart's cry, is that we can all change our focus and start looking around to that person that really needs our help, because what that third person did is restored the one who was broken. It made that person feel they were loved and valued, that someone did care about them. And I don't know, that parable just gets me every time I read it.
It's beautiful. And you just said it. You know, I always say the outcome of compassion is you make the person feel heard and valued and seen. That's the outcome. That's what you're doing by that compassionate action, right? Mm-hmm. And something that just came on my heart to share is that in my experience, and my experience isn't scripture, isn't, you know, the absolute and the most correct one, but in my experience, I've learned that there are two barriers to people being compassionate. You know, like I said earlier, I believe everyone has compassion within them. Everyone is born with love and compassion in their heart. But there are things that blur it And there are things that kind of move us to suppress it. And I think especially in healthcare, but not just in healthcare, everywhere, I think two of the barriers that have kind of encouraged people to suppress it, not always consciously, but maybe sometimes subconsciously, mm-hmm. is two things. First of all, people have this illusion, I'll call it, that, you know, the pain is contagious. And if I'm going to get close to someone who's in pain and suffering, I'm going to suffer. So I'm going to step back because I don't want to infest myself with that suffering. Or I'm going to step back and protect myself, which is what causes desensitization, because I'm afraid I'm going to contract it like a virus, right? So that's why we, as a defense mechanism to kind of protect our heart, we step back and become calloused, desensitized, indifferent, because what we're really trying to do is, oh my God, I'm not about to talk to someone who's dying and ruin my day because I have to conserve my energy for my family, right? Mm-hmm. But if we are empowered to know that not only I'm not going to contract it, but I can provide relief for someone. And with the reward and the fulfillment that that relief brings back to you, you are going to replenish your own soul and the well so that you even have more life energy. So not only it doesn't deplete you, but once you feel that empathy and you step into action and you watch how that action of yours made an impact, that becomes food for your soul.
Absolutely. It's like you said, that well, and some of our wells could be dry, but...
Exactly. And the more we desensitize, the more we're going to dry that well. We're not protecting ourselves. We're just detaching from other human beings, thinking that we're protecting ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. The second barrier I have learned through working with many healthcare professionals over the years is that we don't know what we don't know, right? So what do I mean by that? I see a patient that's grumpy. I see a patient that's irritable. I see a patient that's yelling at me mm-hmm. or is in the hallway screaming. That's all I see. And then I immediately get defensive and I immediately say, how dare you talk to me like that? And I immediately think I have to protect my ego. Because we don't know about the suffering beneath all that. But if we get curious and we pause and we say, this is not about me. They're not really yelling at me. Perhaps they're screaming at life. And I just happen to be in their vicinity, so I just happen to be hearing it. Then we get curious. Like, I see a person that's angry. I don't get offended. I think, what's wrong? What can I do to help them provide relief? Like, that's where my brain goes. Like, that's the perspective shift. To see people as suffering, because suffering is our shared humanity. We all suffer in this lifetime. And so if we immediately get curious and enroll in humble inquiry of something really must be aching that person, let me get curious to find out what, and then do what I can to relieve it. So that's why a huge part of cultivating compassion in your life, in your heart, in your family, in your organization is raising awareness. is raising the understanding of what's going on behind closed doors. Why is that patient angry? And I've had countless examples of those encounters. You know, I had a patient that was combative and angry and yelling and screaming because she wanted to be discharged. And when I dug into it, I found out that she said, you know, my insurance is only going to cover my hospitalization up until today. And any day going forward from now on, I'm going to be incurring charges, which I cannot afford. So get me out of here. But she was screaming. And it took a lot to see through her screaming and anger and yelling and to really delve into the root cause of her suffering and her anger. So those are the two barriers to compassion, if you will, that I have personally seen and experienced. One is that people have this illusion that they're gonna contract the suffering and it's gonna take their joy and life and life force away, when in fact it's actually the ultimate replenishment to your soul. And then the second one is, we just don't know what's going on in someone else's life.
That's beautifully said. And, you know, there's something about being curious and asking questions to get to the root and the reason behind. Because you're right, so many people act out in a certain way because they're afraid, they're frustrated, but there's a reason. And gosh, that is a skill set.
It takes practice, yeah. Just like anything else. It takes practice. And I always tell people it takes a pause to really pause and respond instead of react.
The power of the pause. Boy, do I ever believe in that. Because we wind up saying things we don't want to say if we don't pause. Yeah, that is so good. Oh, I'm learning so much from you. So I would love for you, like, if you have any final things to share with our audience, to encourage them to step out and just to begin to experiment in compassion. Or in closing, what would be your advice? Not a maybe call to action, but share your heart. What is it that you would want to share with someone now that needs to be compassionate, or even someone that needs compassion right now?
So, Debbie, as you asked me that, while there's a lot I want to share with the world, the one thing that came for me in my heart was the power of forgiveness. I always say forgiveness and compassion go hand in hand, and forgiveness is the prerequisite for compassion.
So true.
And so what came for me as a, you know, call to action, as a challenge, if you will, is it's not really hard to be compassionate towards some people, right? If you see a cute little 3-year-old who's running around and all energetic, you just want to run and hug them and offer them everything, right? But it takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of, the word power comes to my mind, to be compassionate towards someone who is not pleasant. It takes a lot of inner power to be compassionate towards someone who has hurt you.
Yes.
And I think the ultimate powerful act of compassion is to be compassionate towards those who have wronged you.
Yes.
Whether intentionally or unintentionally. You know, was it a mother that abandoned you? Was it an abusive father? Was it a partner that cheated on you? Was it a friend that stabbed you in the back? Whoever it was in your lifetime that hurt you and wronged you, think about them right now. bring them into your heart and imagine them as a newborn. They were born to be this innocent, loving human being filled with love. Something, no one's born vicious, no one's born to hurt another. Things happen throughout their life, and that made them bitter, and that made them aggressive and angry and violent. And oftentimes we're hurt by those that all they're really doing is they're doing their best to numb their own pain, right? So if you had a mom who was, I don't know, addicted to narcotics or resorted to alcohol, it wasn't because she wanted to do that to you as a child. It was because she was just trying to do the best she can to cope with her own pain and numb it, right? Now, maybe it was with alcohol, maybe it was with something else. People are just doing their best to survive. And so I invite you to, the invitation is for you to bring that person into your heart and mind today. Think about them and try to imagine, right? Like I said, cognitive empathy is directly correlated with imagination. Imagine all the things they've gone through. You may know a lot of it and you may not, right? If it's a family member, you may have some intel into their life and you may not. Imagine all the things they could have gone through and really close your eyes and hold them in your arms and give them love. Because the only thing that can heal the world is compassion.
That is so beautiful. And I'm so, so glad that you brought up forgiveness. So I'll just share what happened to me yesterday. Just a relationship where there was like a wound, there were like things that happened, and I had been issuing forgiveness. You know, sometimes we have to, I feel like if I see a person's face, if I feel something in my heart, then I know forgiveness. I need to keep forgiving to that healing takes place. And what happened, what I felt yesterday, is I thought of that person and I had compassion. My heart was breaking for the place that this person is in. And I literally stood there and I went, I'm having a compassionate moment right now. For this person, I want the best for them. I want them to be better. And I felt the power, the forgiveness allowed that compassion to come forth. And I just love that you shared that. I just love how you're giving us that visual, because the world needs compassion. And you're right. It's the only way our world will get healed. And that's
it, truly is. And, you know, a quote that I love, Martin Luther King says, darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. This correlates with the topic of forgiveness and compassion, because if you're holding on to that pain, you know, I had a download this morning and I thought, forgiving another person is the ultimate form of self-compassion.
Oh, I love that. So expound on that, what you feel that means, the self-compassion of forgiveness.
So forgiveness, a lot of people don't forgive, and I've walked the walk, and I don't ever talk about anything I haven't personally experienced. A lot of people hold on to that hurt because they identify with it, and they're afraid to let go of that hurt because then they don't know who they are without it. The other reason people don't forgive is because they feel like if I forgive someone, it means that what they did was okay.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what it means. that forgiveness and pardoning are not the same. Forgiveness is an inner experience. You don't even need anyone to apologize to you. You don't need closure. You don't need a text or a phone call. It's an inner experience too. And what helps or helped me forgive was a compassionate mindset. It was a shift of seeing that person, the aggressor, the person who brought on the pain to you. It's a shift of, instead of looking at them as an aggressor, as this evil, horrible person, to a perspective of seeing them as someone who was suffering. And when you see them as someone who was suffering, and their suffering overspilled onto you. You know, I always, when I teach workshops, I say it's kind of like a boiling pot of water that's boiling and it's overflowing, and if you happen to be close to it, your hand is gonna burn. And that's what a hurt person looks like. They're hurting, and that, you know, heat is overflowing, and if you happen to be close to them or related to them, then your hand's gonna burn. So it's not about you. But if you make that shift and look at that person as someone who's really suffering, then at that point, you no longer suffer in pain, but you can tap into that inner compassion that we've been talking about all along and replace your anger and hurt with empathy. And when you get into the practice of doing that, there is no more suffering, and you are in harmony with all of life.
And so you're not taking it personal. You're understanding that there's something bigger going on here. Have empathy, and it will protect your heart from absorbing anger and all of the things that that moment wants to put upon you. That's a real protection, having that empathy and that compassion.
You don't absorb it because it's not about you.
It's not about us. That's a great mindset to have. I have loved just listen. I could just sit here and just listen to the wisdom that comes from you, my angel of compassion.
Aww.
So I know that you have mentioned workshops, and you have your compassion clinic and your talk time. So I can just sense that anyone who's listening now would love to learn more from you. Just sit at your feet. How could they do that? How could they connect with you?
Well, I'm very active on LinkedIn, and one of the beauties of having a strange name is that I'm the only Ponta of Haiti there.
The one and only.
The one and only, although no one can say my name, at least they can find me. Anyone that needs any kind of support can always email me at ponta@pontaofahiti.com. And my talk time is a weekly forum to really raise awareness into the suffering that people have and their, you know, the human suffering, which is what I talked about earlier, because I'm a firm believer that once you understand what other people are going through, then you're going to be more compassionate inherently. No one needs to tell you and force you to be compassionate. If I don't know what's going on in your life, I can't be compassionate. So the intention of talk time is to raise awareness and provide relief. And those are also currently being held. It's open to everyone. They're currently being held on LinkedIn, but I do have a vision to make it a larger platform to extend and expand its impact. But meanwhile, you can email me, you can, yeah, connect with me on LinkedIn. You'll find me.
I'll put all of that information in my show notes so everybody can connect with you. And are you available for speaking engagements?
I am. I actually have one in a week. I do give keynotes to, like I said, my wheelhouse is healthcare, but I think I believe the message of compassion applies to all areas of life. And if I can be there to reconnect your audience and your team to their inherent compassion, it would be the honor of a lifetime for me.
Well, I would highly recommend that you reach out and have Pantea come and speak at your event, or because this is a message the world needs to hear. This is a message that the world is really desperate for. We need to understand compassion and really how it can change people's lives and change us, because then we'll begin to function as we were created with the compassion that's been placed in our hearts. And so I just know Pantea will make a difference. So I just invite her to come and speak and check out her compassion clinic and her talk time and just get involved with this beautiful soul, because I know she has a message for your heart as well. You know, thinking.
Thank you so much, Debbie. I'm so humbled. This was a hour that really replenished my soul, just being in your presence. And if I can say one last thing,
yes,
is that, you know, having been at the bedside, having been a hospice nurse and practiced in different areas of nursing, and having given all sorts of interventions to help alleviate pain and suffering, I can say with confidence that when all else fails, when there's no more drugs to give, when there's nothing else you can do, when all else fails, compassion prevails.
I believe that, and I am going to pray that the territory underneath your feet enlarges. I am praying that your platform of sharing the truth of compassion just has a ripple effect around the world, that there truly will be a global impact, and people will begin to understand, embrace, and walk and live in compassion, all because of you.
Well, I share in with your prayer. I think the glory goes to the virtue, and the divine force that led me onto this path. I know different people have different belief systems. I believe I was led and called to spread the message of compassion. So I don't take personal credit. The glory goes to the divine calling and whatever it is that's asking me to. We have different names for it. Some call it God, some call it energy, some call it the universe. That higher intelligence that is our creator, I've been called on this path and I just am following it. So I'm humbled by everything you said, but it's not me.
I know, but you are the vessel. And so I do, I just pray, because I do believe God placed that in your heart the moment he placed you in your mother's womb. This gift of compassion that comes from him, because he is compassion. And so I believe that you are that force in the earth that's being used to remind us all to come back to how we were always wired to be compassionate. And so I thank you so much, Pantea, for being with us today on the Transition Bridge podcast. And I thank everyone who is listening. Please share this episode. There are so many who are desperate to hear about compassion. There are so many of us that can learn how to become compassionate. Just thank you for being here today. As a village, we always come together to embrace, grow, and be transformed by the purpose and the power of transitions in our life.
Thank you for joining us today on the Transition Bridge podcast. We appreciate you. If you enjoyed listening today, please go ahead and subscribe or review the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to check out the show notes. And for more information about Debbie, go to DebbieRonca.com. That's DebbieRonca.com.